Blog Talk Radio.
The HD View.
Happy Tuesday, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to Help for HD Radio. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. That's the toll-free number. When you call in, press 1. We'll cue you into the show. Please tell all your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. Thank you, 85,000 listeners, for your support and interest in Help for HD programming. Tonight, our incredible special guest is Margaret Viotto. And I can't say her name very well, but her last name's Gallardo, and I do apologize for that. She was born in California. She became a nurse, met and married her husband, Dr. Luis Gallardo Ayala, and moved to Mexico. She has 7 children, and now at the age of 90, she is celebrating about her trials and triumphs over Huntington's disease and her life of love and commitment to help those who are suffering from HD. Her association, she is director of her association, Mexicana de la Enfermedad de Huntington, IAP, in Mexico, and she is here with us tonight. We're so proud to have her on the show. Margaret, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine. I'm just fine. I'm going to be a little confused here, but I'm pretty good.
Daniel Medina is with us tonight, too. He's going to help us do some translation, and we're going to have a great show tonight. And so, Margaret, you have had a long life, and we are so blessed to have you with us tonight. You have so many experiences to tell us about, but can you give us a little story, just a story about how you started out with Huntington's?
Oh, that was... that was because I found out after many years of being married that my husband had Huntington's disease, and I knew nothing about Huntington's disease. And so we had to just sort of do everything we could. The first thing I was so lucky with, I met the doctor here in Mexico. I forgot her name just a minute. I didn't forget it. I've lost my mind this minute. The first thing she said to me was, there's an international congress going to happen in Boston. And she said, would you like to go? And of course I said, yes, of course I would like to go. And so I went to Boston to a Huntington's Disease International Association meeting, and everybody was so calm and everybody was so polite, and they were so it was so different, and all I wanted to do was cry and tell everybody my husband has Huntington's disease. And I didn't know why they were so calm, but I realized after many years that you learn to be calm, and you learn that you have to have acceptance, and that you couldn't do a lot of good. And even the persons that have Huntington's disease, you can give them a worthwhile life. You can keep them going. You can keep them happy. And then there comes that time when they don't really know that they're so sick anymore, and then they're just so pleasant to be with, and you can give them all that love that they need, and it's just wonderful to be with them. It doesn't matter if they have Huntington's disease or they're your children, and they're your family, and there's love, and there's kindness, and there's a joy in your life because they were born and you had them. One of my daughters said to me before she knew that she was going to be sick, she said, if you had had an abortion because you didn't want to have any children with Huntington's disease, she said, I'd punch you in the nose. So she said it was worthwhile to live.
Yeah.
Even if it was just for a few years, and it wasn't so few. She's 60 so years old now, and she was okay until she was about 55. So I think she had a good life, and so I can't say that Huntington is the worst thing in the world. it is the worst thing in the world if you have it, but she had a good life, and my other children, they also had a good life while they were young. Mm-hmm. I can count on that.
Yeah. Okay, Daniel's going to translate for us.
Okay. Margaret, nos dice que después de muchos años de estar casada, supo que su esposo tenía la enfermedad de Huntington, y ella pues no, desconocía de la enfermedad, y entonces le preguntó a una doctora en México que le aconsejó que fuera a un congreso en Boston de Huntington, una organización de Huntington's, y ella fue y quería llorar, cuando fue allí quería llorar, quería gritar y quería decirles a todos de lo que sentía, ¿verdad?, la frustración, y ella notó que todos estaban calmados, y ella dice, ¿por qué están calmados?, pero llegó a comprender que después de muchos, lo único que puedes hacer es ayudar a las personas, tratar de hacer algo, porque no hay una cura para Huntington's, pero ella ya comprendió que tienes que amar a tus hijos, a la familia, a las personas que están enfermas, es lo mejor que les puedes dar para darles una mejor calidad de vida. Y luego dice que un día su hija, una de sus hijas que la diagnosticaron con Huntington's, dice que le dijo que si le hubiera abortado, que ella le hubiera pegado en la nariz, le hubiera pegado en la cara, porque dice que pues le dio buena vida y ella contrajo la enfermedad, se empezó a enfermar ya a los 55, pero los años anteriores vivió una muy buena vida de calidad y le dijo, pues, me dices una buena vida, mamá, y yo te hubiera pegado la nariz y me hubieras abortado.
Thank you, Daniel.
You're welcome.
Oh, so, Margaret, how did you first become aware of Huntington's? I know you didn't really know anything about it until your husband started showing symptoms at the age of 56, but then what happened?
Well, you see, my husband was a doctor, and he had no idea, not even after they told him he had Huntington's disease. He was too far gone mentally like that, so he didn't ever understand. He thought it was a beautiful name. Huntington is a very popular English name, and you know in California you have Huntington Park, and you have a Huntington Museum, you have Huntington Beach, so it's a well-known name, but we didn't know about it, and it took him a long time. He got his diagnosis when he was around 60 years old, so we didn't know anything about it. We had children were married, and we had children, and we didn't know until it was quite, the doctors here just didn't know. They didn't know. They couldn't decide between Parkinson and Alzheimer and anything else. So we didn't know for a long time what was wrong with him. And it, when we found out, of course, it was like a bomb hitting us.
Yes.
But you have to learn to live with it. You have to learn to accept it. Acceptance is, to me, the biggest word that goes with Huntington's disease. Because if you can accept it, then you can work with it. Then you could try to help and do some good with it. So that's what I think I learned about at the beginning. I had to learn to stop crying. I thought I was drowning in my own tears, but I didn't drown. And now I've got four children with Huntington's disease out of seven, and one has already passed away. So it's a big, horrible thing and hateful. I hate it, but I have acceptance that we gave them the best life we could with a lot of love, 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 love. They love it. They love love. They love to be talked to. They love to be held. They love to be well-treated. I find that people, especially when having patients, those that are not badly treated in their home, those who are punished because they don't behave, those people don't get the love they need and they become worse. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're kind and gentle and try to understand them, they are different. They become sweet and they become lovable. Mm-hmm. And they are lovable. My children are lovable by me anyway.
That's the whole attitude of acceptance, right?
To me, it's acceptance.
Yes.
You have to accept it. You can't get rid of it. Mm-hmm. You've got to accept it. And learn learn to be what it is. No, I mean, if you love your children, my son that lives with me now, he's just as sweet and polite, and he's 53 years old, and he's really going down fast now, but he doesn't lose his education, and he loves me to sit with him in the evenings and at night before he goes to sleep and tell him how much I love him. And he doesn't fight with me. He doesn't get angry. He doesn't get, you know, it's just, it changes them if they get enough of that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's hard because some people have a lot of children and they can't just take care of the sick one, or they don't have anybody who loves them enough to take care of them.
Daniel, can you translate for us?
Yes. Le preguntamos a Mark cómo se dio cuenta de Huntington. Dice que su esposo, cuando lo diagnosticaron, pues los doctores estaban confundidos. Pensaban que era la enfermedad de Parkinson. Y él, pues, ya estaba más avanzado. Ya tenía 60 años y él, pues, ya estaba perdiendo la noción de las cosas. O él pensaba que Huntington era como un bonito nombre de partes acá en Estados Unidos, como una ciudad que se llama Huntington Beach, Huntington Park, Huntington, eso. Él decía, ¡ay, qué bonito nombre de esa enfermedad! Pero ya no tenía noción de lo que le estaba sucediendo. Lo diagnosticaron a los 60 años y, pues, ya para ese tiempo ya tuvieron los 7 hijos. Y dice que era como una, le cayó como una bomba a la familia, le cayó como una bomba la enfermedad, porque ellos no sabían nada, pero ya cuando supieron, vieron que era algo muy muy horrible. Y dijo Margaret que llegó al punto de que, pues, lloró muchas lágrimas. Dice que, pues, está sorprendida que no se hundió en tantas lágrimas que ha llorado, ¿verdad? Pero dice que tuvo que llegar al punto que tenía que aceptarlo, y de los 7 hijos, 4 fueron diagnosticados con Huntington. Dice que ya se murió uno, y dice que, pues, lo odia Huntington, como, pues, todos los que estamos involucrados en esto lo odiamos, por eso estamos luchando tan arduamente. Pero dice que cuando das amor, puro amor, y eso ayuda a disminuir el sufrimiento, porque, como dice ella, que su hijo de 52 años que vive con ella, que está recayendo muy muy rápido, dice que que le da mucho amor, que le dice que lo quiere, que lo ama, y le da atención, y él es muy dócil y muy amoroso con ella también. So, ella dice, es lo que las dos cosas que le pone énfasis es aceptar que está la enfermedad, porque no podemos curarlo, no hay nada. Y segundo, dar mucho amor a los pacientes, porque es lo que necesitan, porque ellos están sufriendo como uno está sufriendo, pero ellos sufren más porque la tienen. Yeah.
So Margaret, thank you, Daniel. Margaret, what was your motivation in starting the organization? And talk to us about your organization. How does it work for the individuals?
Okay. The reason I started, of course, in this was because I had to do something. My husband was ill, and I had to take care of him, I was very busy all the time, but I decided I went to the university that we have here. There was a course on volunteer work, and I started out by learning about volunteer work, and I met a lot of people from other groups that were in the class. I was the only person 72 years old at that time. All the others were young ladies, you know, but they were nice anyway to me. That's the way I started. I took a course and I started going to the hospital in neurology con la doctora Elisa Alonso. I remember her name now. She was having a group of for you. She was having, what do they call them, self-help groups? I don't know what they're called in English. Self-help groups, I say.
Support group.
Yeah, group of there for you. Mm-hmm. And I was going to the group of the groups of the people who were having Huntington's disease. Then in my own home, I started inviting the people who had families, who were the members of the families to my home. We would have meetings, and we would talk about Huntington's disease, and I would have people come in and give talks that would help them. And we just kept going that way. And then one of my very good friends, she had a brother who has the family Lenz here in Mexico is a family that well-known name because they did a lot of wonderful things for Mexico, had good factories and treated their workers very well and things like that. And my friend's brother, cousin was in that, he was a Lenz. And so I went to see him, and he offered me a house. He said, you find a house that's convenient for you, for your association, and if it's, I find it's worth it, I'll buy it and you can use it as long as you need it, and you don't have to pay me a cent. That was just like a miracle, you know? So that's what I did. I found a very nice home. It's only one floor, so I don't have to worry about the patients falling down the stairs. And that was in 2001 year after I had worked with Huntington's already since 1993. So then I got a home to have the association. Although at my own home, we were having the meetings, and I was we were doing a lot of things, having parties and things like that for the patients. So now we have this home. We have the different therapies. We try to give them physiotherapy. We have a lot of wonderful apparatus, what do you call them, to work on. We have students or professors, girls from some of the universities that come and give physiotherapy. We have a girl that gives vocal, you know, that the people with Huntington's after a time, they can't talk because they have the same problem with their muscles and in their throat in order to speak. And we have a person that tries to teach them to speak and just to say one syllable at a time and things like that. And we have, we even have a person there as a little spiritual, it's no religion in particular, just a little spiritual feelings because people do like that. And we also have a music therapist most of the time. And all the therapies we can get them. And then also on Monday, for instance, we were offered at one time, we got a wonderful camioneta that we can put 14 people in at a time or 15. And if they like, if they really want to go, we make them 16. And we take them out every Monday. We take them or to the zoo or to a museum. Or they like to play football and fall down and play their own rules. You know, they steal the ball and they push. And the ladies play with them. It's incredible. They love football. So the ladies play football and they stand in front of the little goal they have and the ball passes inside the goal and everybody congratulates them. So they're very happy with their football games. And Monday is a very special day, and they take a picnic lunch. And when they come in the mornings, they have breakfast, and then they go out on their field trip. And usually, when they come on the rest of the days, they have a breakfast and lunch, and then they go home. They go to their homes. It's very hard for them to come if they don't have anybody to bring them because of the because it's very difficult for them to be alone sometimes. It's also hard for them to get here if they're very poor. They don't have money and they don't have cars. So, but they like to come to the association when they come. We try to have a party for them on for Christmas, for Dia de los Reyes, the Three Kings days. What's that called in English? I don't remember. And we try to have for Mother's Day, and then we try to have a party for them on Father's Day, and the day of the child. And well, we like to have parties for them. They like to have parties. They like us to have parties for them.
Good food and all that, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, we have this wonderful house. It's wonderful. And we're getting more help now that we're here, too. Yes.
Very nice.
That was one.
I have a question. Is the house it's only your only thing, but it belongs to somebody else? It's not yours?
No, it's not. We're not the owners at all. No,
okay.
Not at all.
Okay.
They don't charge us rent. They do not charge us rent. We have the use of the house, and the owner, because he has an association and he does that, he buys houses for associations.
Wow.
So he has an office here. As of some time, and he's also part of our board. So he's a very, very generous, a very kind man. And I also have a man that is, what's it called? He sells antiques. And he's been helping me for the last few years also. He's just an angel. It's an angel. And he keeps us all jumping busy. He just knows how to handle us and make us work harder. But we've had some wonderful people with us. That's fortunate. We never have enough money. That's a fact.
Yep.
But somehow or other, we always make it through. Somehow or other, something comes up. We have a garage sale, and we work at it.
So how do you get your funding? I mean, obviously, I know you do garage sales, and you have angel donors. We call them angel donors, people who give from their hearts, you know.
Yes, yes.
But how else do you find the money? What do you fundraise? Or
here in Mexico, we have the Monte de Piedad. That's where they sell things that you need money, and they loan you money, you know.
Mm, like
and you leave your things
there.
Pawn shop.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right. And we have there's a group called Compartir. They give classes to people who are learning to be, they have associations. And also we give them a report of what we need. And if we think we are eligible, then they give us a yearly amount of money. It's not going to pay for a monthly expense, but they give us a yearly amount of money, and then we divide it up between the 12 months. And we have, what else do we have? We have, what else do we have? We have the, that's it. I have it written out here. There's a Fed Foundation and the Best and Dr. Simi. The Dr. Simi, this is Mr. Gonzalez. His name is Mr. Gonzalez. He has all these pharmacies here in Mexico, and he does
Does he help with the medication?
He does a lot of donations. He sends us some food. He sends us.
Nice.
We get beans, not for everybody, but we get beans for our dispensers, for our food baskets, and he sends us rice, and he sends us a lot of things.
Nice.
And then there's a group from a school. They are teaching their students. They're young. It's they're younger than prep school. They come once in a while, and they each of the children bring a gift to us, like cornflakes or beans or rice or whatever they want to bring. They bring us donations like that, and they come and help us clean up a bit. And that's it's a Catholic school. They're beginning to teach their children something that they don't have much of in Mexico. They don't have this feeling of giving, you know? Mm-hmm. And they don't know how yet. So they're teaching the children how to be generous with the persons that have less. I think it's going to be a great thing one day when everybody learns that, you know? So that's what we get. They give us so much, and then we divide it between 12 and make it last.
Yes. Budget.
have to keep a budget, definitely.
Yes,
I think we're going to have something new pretty soon. I think something's coming up, but I can't tell you yet because I haven't
stopped.
I'm not sure. But I think that we are going to have a better luck in a little while, pretty soon.
Very good to
I'll
know.
Let you know.
Stay tuned. Daniel, do you want to translate some of that for us? Okay.
Yes. Le preguntamos a Margaret de que nos platicara de cómo comenzó su organización. Nos dijo que fue a una universidad y a aprender a tomar clases de cómo ser voluntario. Y tomó un curso, el curso que tomó tenía ya 72 años cuando lo tomó, y dice que la mayoría de las muchachas que estaban tomando el curso estaban más jóvenes, que ya eran la más grande de edad. Y luego dice que fue a un hospital con la doctora Elisa Alonso, y allí de neurología, y allí tenían un grupo de apoyo para los de Huntington, de los que sufren de Huntington, y poco a poco empezaron a reunirse con las familias, y ella los invitó en su casa de ella, los invitaba a su casa y se empezaron a reunir, y empezaron a hablar de y ayudarse el uno al otro, y apoyarse el uno al otro, y después nos platicó de que una amiga que tenía un hermano y de una familia que ayuda a mucha gente en México y ha hecho muchas cosas buenas, que le prestó una casa. Este señor pues compra casas y le dijo a ella que podía hacer esa casa, que no le iba a cobrar renta. Y esa es la casa que usan para los pacientes, la que tienen ahorita. Y dice que es una casa de un piso para que los pacientes no tengan que ir subir las escaleras, se puedan caer o se puedan lastimar. Esto sucedió en el año 2001, cuando tuvieron esto, y fue un paso muy grande para la asociación. Y en esta, pues, aquí en esta casa hacen muchas cosas buenas para los pacientes de Huntington. Les dan fisioterapia para sus músculos y para su cuerpo. Hay muchachas que llegan muchachas que llegan a la universidad que están tomando cursos en ciertas materias y les ayudan con el habla, les dan terapia de música y terapia de pues de muchas cosas que para ayudarles para que tengan un mejor estilo de vida. Y dice que los lunes les encanta a los pacientes, les encantan los lunes porque eso es cuando comen desayuno y después se van de paseo. Y solamente dice que agarró una troca de donde una camioneta donde caben 14 personas y se suben y se van a pasear. Y a veces juegan deporte, su favorito deporte que juegan es fútbol y se ponen a jugar y bien alegres y se la pasan a gusto o hacen todo tipo de actividades. Y los otros días comen desayuno y lonche y después se van a sus casas después de haber hecho sus actividades. Y los familiares, pues, les dan un momento de respiro a los familiares mientras ellos están allí haciendo actividades o les ayuda a los familiares y les ayuda a los pacientes o todos se ayudan. Y le preguntamos a Margaret cómo funda esto? ¿De dónde viene el dinero para fundar todos estos estos proyectos? Dice que pues el grupo de, el Monte de Piedad ayuda mucho. Hay otro grupo que se llama Compartir, grupo Best, y otros que si califican les dan una buena donación. Y también dice que tiene una garage, ventas de garage, y venden cosas también allí, sacan dinero por ahí, y hay gente que les da donaciones con despensas para sus canastas que contienen frijoles, arroz y otros alimentos que son esenciales para los pacientes y sus familias. Y también dice que nos compartió una historia de niños que vienen a ayudar, que de un en cual es enseñando que ayuden a su prójimo, y van y les ayudan a limpiar, les ayudan a hacer cualquier cosa. Y dice Margaret, nos compartió que esto hace falta mucho en México, que no es muy común que se ayuden uno al otro así. So dice que ojalá que enseñándoles a estos niños puede ser un México mejor, donde puedan cambiar y ayudar así como lo están haciendo ahí en la asociación. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Daniel. You know, Margaret, what you're doing is fantastic with helping the families by giving respite and also providing a safe place for them to be while they're about doing their own activities or working or whatever they're having to do, providing food and clothing and shelter and necessities. Are you finding that there are more Huntington's families or individuals with Huntington's, or are your numbers staying about the same? How are you finding more people with Huntington's?
Well, actually, when we started, we had a lot more persons interested. I think it's because of the terrible big change now in the city of the traffic. People can't get around. They can't get to. There's no way to. They have the metro that's so full of people. Nobody wants to use it, and it's hard. If they don't have somebody who can bring them, they cannot come anymore. Mm. It's very difficult for the patients to get here because it's so dangerous, you know, to be out on your own if you can't walk straight. One of my sons that has died already, he got picked up 3 times by the police because they thought that he was drunk. You know, they would bring him home when they did with a little coaxing, with a little dinerito. They would leave him say home.
Mordida.
Yeah, that's it. One of those things. I don't know how to use them very well, so I don't even know how to pronounce it, I guess. So, you know, they look like they're drunk sometimes. And he was brought home 3 times because of that. So it's difficult for them. Every day it's getting a little difficult for them to come or to have someone to bring them. Because in many families, you know, in all families, or the father or the mother is sick or they're dead or they're gone. You know, because they abandon the sick people, so they don't. It's very difficult for them to get here, but we have around 309 patients already registered, and we are helping around 70 people a month every month, because even if they live, let's say, in Acapulco, like yesterday a lady came from Acapulco with her sick son, and she won't be here for another 3 months, maybe, but she came for her medicine, and she came, and we pay her passage so that way she could come. And there are people from Acapulco, and there are people from cities near here. So they come for their food baskets, and they come for their medicine, and they come for their diapers, and they come for see a wheelchair or whatever we have to offer. They come for those things, even if they cannot come every day or every week. They come because they need help. Then they don't have any money. I don't know how they live on nothing, but they do. They live, but not very well.
Yeah. So do you promote?
Yes, we have a lot of work here. We have a lot of people, and we love them all.
Margaret,
I don't think it's my son, maybe, but I try.
Margaret, do you advertise your organization, or do people just know about it?
Do I what?
Advertise?
No, I don't know how to advertise.
Okay.
We have a web,
okay.
And we're getting a little more interest and now that we have somebody working on it constantly. And no, we don't advertise. I have no idea about advertising. Sometimes I put a little messages in Facebook. So we, especially on when they have problems, you know, and I don't like the way they're solving them, or they're asking for help from other people that are sick. What are they taking? And that's not a way to get you to take care of your illness. You have to see a doctor. You have to talk to the doctor. He has to tell you what you need. Everybody's so different. So now and then I write on Facebook, but not too much. I write with my family. We write a lot,
mm-hmm.
a lot, but not so much for new patients. I like to write. I like to read the ones from the States. They're very interesting, but I don't like all the time the way they solve their problems. But then everybody has to do it their own way.
Mm-hmm. Margaret, what are some of the limitations that you have there in Mexico?
Well, number
one,
it's exactly that, the edición, to get it known.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very difficult. We are not getting it very known. It's, I really don't know. If I go out in the street and I say something to somebody, we have done that. We have made CDs and little stories about Huntington's disease, and we go out and ask the people, hey, have you heard of Huntington? And they look, what's that? You know,
mm-hmm.
They've never heard of it. So we're not getting out very much. I don't think we're not. It's getting a little better. It's getting a little better now that now Donna Hina is here putting out messages in their Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's getting a little better, but not yet. And the doctors didn't know a few years ago. The doctors didn't know. Now they know. But very many people tell us the doctor doesn't know how to treat him. You know, we have a doctor that comes twice a week here, and they really know more about Huntington's disease than most doctors. Actually, they are giving a course in the National Institute of Neurología. They're giving a course to doctors, student doctors, the interns, about neurology with psychiatry,
mm-hmm.
because that was two. They were two like two enemies, you know. They were against each other. They didn't cooperate. And now they're trying to get them to understand the problem from both views. And I think that's very important because a lot of people are being treated too strongly by a psychiatrist. And maybe this psychologist doesn't give them all the time exactly what they need either. But if they have both ideas, then they could treat the patient more fairly. Yes, I think that's a wonderful new class that they're giving the interns at the medical school.
That's wonderful, Daniel. Can you translate for us?
Yes. Le preguntamos a Margaret que le dijimos que pues es grande eso lo que está haciendo para la por las, lo que están haciendo para las familias, para darles un respiro y así que puedan hacer actividades y como les dan de comer y todo lo que están haciendo. Es una gran cosa. Y le preguntamos si todos los años que ha estado activa ayudando, o que si ha visto que ha incrementado o ha disminuido la cantidad de gente con Huntington's, o cómo ve que la gente pueda llegar allí a la institución, y dice que lo que está viendo es de que pues la gente, antes había más gente cuando empezaron que iba a la asociación, pero ahora porque hay más tráfico y la gente le da miedo salir, o se mueren los parientes y ya no pueden, no los quieren llevar a la asociación. Es muy difícil y llegar solo, y a veces también la policía, si los ven en la calle, piensan que están borrachos, porque esos son unos de los síntomas, que parece que están borrachos. Como ella nos contó que su hijo que tiene la enfermedad, lo pararon 3 veces, pensaron que estaba tomado, y pues el único modo de que lo dejaran es que le dieran la famosa mordida, ¿verdad?, a los policías. Y nos contó que tiene 309 pacientes registrados ahorita, y ayudan a 70 personas por mes. Y nos platicó de que pues que gente viene de por todas partes, de todas partes de la República. Y por ejemplo, de una señora, nos contó que una señora era de Acapulco, y para recibir el medicamento, medicina, silla de ruedas y todo lo que le pudieran ofrecer, pero ella dijo que esa señora pues no podía hacer el viaje, ellos le ayudaron con el viaje, pagar el viaje para que viniera a agarrar las dispensas y las cosas. Y es muy difícil porque pues Margaret nos ha contado de que son la única asociación en México que tiene esas, que hace esas cosas. Imagínate, alguien que no vive en el DF, pues que vivan en Tijuana o que vivan acá en Veracruz, es muy difícil que hagan el viaje. Y le preguntamos si hace publicidad para que la gente sepa de la asociación y del Huntington's. Y dice que no, que no han hecho muchas, pero sí ahora están mejorando poco a poco, están haciendo CDs, están haciendo un poquito, ya ahora que los doctores están siendo instruidos, cuando van a la escuela de medicina los instruyen, y les instruyen de la enfermedad de Huntington. Antes no sabían los doctores, ahora están sabiendo más, y eso es bueno, eso es muy bueno. Y dice que una cosa que a lo mejor van a hacer, que ella escuchó que iban a reunir la neurología, la iban a reunir con la psiquiatría, entonces iba así, yo creo que les quería dar mejor tratamiento, porque los pacientes, las personas de Huntington sufren problemas psiquiátricos y neurológicos, o todo combinado, o si entonces si tienen esas dos ramas se unen, va a ser mucho mejor para los pacientes de Huntington.
Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel. Margaret, do the people who come to the home, do they have to pay for the services, or how does that work? And I know that you offer a lot of benefits to them, food and clothes, or food and diapers and medicine, that kind of thing. But do they have
to
pay?
Well, we don't charge very much. For instance, for the medicine, which is very expensive, it's our biggest expense, we charge 30% maximum, and sometimes we don't charge anything when we think that you can't pay for them. So 30%, if it's 100 pesos, we would pay 33 pesos on that, and that's not very much. On the food, the meals, we do not charge anything at all. We do not charge, we charge a very small amount when they start, just to get them started, so they'll feel like they're entering into something worthwhile. And for the food baskets, Food baskets would cost us around between 200 and 300 pesos, and we charge them 30 pesos. That's all. Mm-hmm. It's just a sort of a symbolic, you know, sometimes if you give something in a way that's not appreciated and it has a little price on it, it's worth more than people. It's worth, sometimes even worth more than they could pay, I guess, actually. See, so that's the way it is. I think we do not charge for them to come to the association. There's no charge for that. We do not charge for them to come and have breakfast or lunch. There's no charge for that. Mm-hmm. I think they charge 10 pesos to take them on the field trip. 10 pesos, which is what's that, one penny or less than a penny, mm-hmm. USA.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Margaret, does your government support charities at all there?
In general, I don't know.
Oh.
It does not. It does not. It does not help us. No, I don't think so. They're just beginning to get learn about Huntington's, I think. But no, for a while we were getting donations monthly, legal yearly, from the Secretary of Salud, Health Secretary. But they had some problems, and they were being investigated and things like that, and they stopped giving us money. We have trying to get started again with them, but it hasn't worked out yet. No, I think we, the different associations, are helping the government. They could not take care of all these associations. They could not take care of all the misery that we have here in Mexico.
That's a fact.
I don't think they could. There's too many other expenses.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if they had some sort of funds for charity purposes, that kind of like how our National Institute of Health or something like that.
Well, they have a Seguro Social, but it costs a bit. Like, for instance, we have to pay Seguro Social for all of our workers. You know, it's the law. We have to pay the Seguro Social, so they have Seguro Social. But most of the people who have Seguro Social, they like that because they get at the end, maybe they could get a home or something simple. But actually, it's a drag on us because we are paying money for them to see a doctor that they don't go to see because they usually have their own personal doctors.
Mm-hmm.
But Seguro Social is a law, and we have to pay that. So that's not very much help, I think.
Mm-hmm. Daniel, can you translate for us?
I beg your pardon?
I was asking Daniel to translate for us.
Oh.
Le preguntamos a Margaret si la gente que va allí a la asociación tiene que pagar. Y nos contó que no cobran mucho, más lo que cobran es más simbólico que otra cosa, porque, por ejemplo, para medicinas usualmente nomás les cobran el 30%, por decir, si son 100 pesos, les cobran 30 pesos. Y las comidas no cobran nada, les cobran, les cobran por canastas que cuestan 200 o 300 pesos, les cobrando más 30 pesos. Y para cuando van a las excursiones les cobran 10 pesos. Y nos contó, nos dijo que usualmente, por decir, que si alguien no pudieran dar eso, pues no les van a cobrar, pero para que se sientan que ellos, si lo tienen, para que se sientan que están contribuyendo van a apreciar más lo que se les está dando, por eso lo hacen en un modo simbólico, como lo he mencionado. También le preguntamos si el gobierno de México apoya organizaciones benéficas, perdón, y ella dijo que no nos apoyan, y antes el secretario de salud les apoyaba con una cierta cantidad, pero hubo unos problemas donde fueron investigados, la secretaria de salud fueron investigados o ya no apoyaron, ya no podían apoyar a la asociación, y pero dice que están intentando reconectarse para que les ayuden, pero al mismo tiempo nos cuenta que todo lo que están haciendo las organizaciones benéficas en México, el gobierno de México no pudiera hacer eso porque no tiene, ellos hacen demasiado. Las obras benéficas, las organizaciones benéficas hacen demasiado para ayudar a la gente. Y nos platicó del seguro social, que es algo que es requerido para todos, a toda persona, empleados en México, y que algo que ellos les está afectando negativamente en el que es de que tienen que pagarle a sus empleados a seguro social, y muchas veces estos empleados tienen sus propios doctores y ni usan el seguro, o tienen que salir de los fondos de la organización, y nos contó que sí, eso es algo pues que viene, que es obligación que tengan que pagar, pero no es bueno para la organización.
Thank you. Margaret?
Yes.
So you have a certain number of patients that come, and then sometimes they stop coming because they get sicker. Do you have, like, whole families, like brothers and sisters come?
No, I didn't understand that. I don't. What was the question?
Your patients that come to your organization.
Yes.
Do you have sisters and brothers of those patients as well, or just individuals?
Oh, if there are more than one patient, we would take them all, mm-hmm. all the patients. We do not take persons who do not have Huntington's disease.
Right.
It wouldn't be fair to the ones with Huntington's disease here to be. It has to compete with the healthy people, I think.
Yeah, what I meant was if they're sick, too.
And I don't think they'd be interested in coming. They have their own problems. I have that's all.
Okay.
Is there anything else that we are going to talk about?
Yes.
I should just
yes,
like
let's
to read
talk about your goals.
One little thought I wrote
okay.
about acceptance.
Okay. Go ahead.
Shall I?
Yes, please do.
Okay. I wrote this. When you first hear of such a horrible disease, when you first live through it, you cannot believe or even imagine that you could tolerate such misery, and then you have a son that becomes ill. You do not believe that you can learn acceptance, but you must. You have other children, you must show strength, you must be strong for them, you must do whatever you can to learn to do whatever is possible, to be there for them, to not let them know how sick they are, and love them and encourage them. Little by little, realize that as their illness advances, they begin to lose the knowledge of how ill they are. They seem to be, and there seems to be a natural acceptance, and they begin to live their days in peace. That peace is not yours. You see what is happening, but you must. You must be patient with them, understand why they act as they do, that you will always love and be there for them in spite of their illness. That's what I think about our patients, about my children, about the family, how we have to be with them.
Daniel. Translation.
Beautiful.
Yes, beautiful.
Man, thank you.
Very good thoughts.
It's a love letter.
It is, isn't it? Yes, it is.
It's a love letter.
Lo que le preguntamos a Margaret fue si tenía, por ejemplo, cuando van pacientes, van hermanos, hermanas, familiares familias enteras a la asociación. Y lo que nos dijo, pues, el único requisito o el mayor requisito que piden, por supuesto, de que tienen que tener la enfermedad de Huntington para que ellos les ayuden, porque si no tienen la enfermedad o si están sintomáticos, si no están sintomáticos con la enfermedad, entonces no pueden ayudarles en ese aspecto, porque entonces les quitara recursos a los que ya están enfermos, o ellos se concentran en los que están enfermos, en ayudar a los que están enfermos. Y nos platicó de que algo que escribió ella, y de aceptar, y dice cuando primero escuchas de la enfermedad tan horrible, piensas que no vas a poder aceptarla, pero tienes que aceptarla, tienes que ser paciente, tienes que luchar siempre, y tienes que amar a tus seres queridos que están sufriendo, porque eso es lo más que ellos pueden ver o pueden sentir, porque es una enfermedad muy horrible, y entonces aceptándola ya puedes hacer más cosas para ayudar a tus seres queridos.
Beautiful.
Y amándolos.
Very beautiful. Well, Margaret, yes. Tell us, what are your goals and your visions going forward here with your organization?
My goals and my visions.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've had this goal for 20 years. I want to have like an albergue. I want to have like a home for those that are going to die and have no place to die, for those that are living as filthy homes with not enough food, with the flies, and I want to have a place where they could go die in decency. Mm. That's my dream. That's been my dream for a long time. I cannot been able to get anybody interested. They just say it would cost too much. But maybe, well, that's what I say. I think maybe something like that could happen. Something like that. I have an idea that maybe somebody is going to listen to me one of these days. I really believe that that's what we need. Some place to hold these people where they'll be well taken care of and not live in this misery and filth and poverty that is so strong here.
That's a beautiful wish. And, you know, if you ask, it'll be given to you.
What?
If you ask, it will be given to you.
I'm asking.
Yes, she's asking. I'm asking.
I'm begging. I've been begging for a long time. I think it's going to come.
I think
it's coming. I have more faith right now than I've had for a long time. Just knowing you has given me more confidence that there is more interest in the world than just living here like I have been all this time by myself. No?
Oh, yes. See.
So I really thank you, Melissa, and I thank you too, Daniel. This is like opening a new chapter for me.
Aww. Yes,
Daniel, can you translate the last part that she said about the home and a place for? Yes.
Le preguntamos cuáles eran las metas y visiones para Margaret, lo que quiere lograr en el futuro. Y dice, mi máximo sueño es tener una casa para los que se están muriendo de Huntington's, para que mueran decentemente, porque para poder ahí abrazarlos, tocarlos, que no estén muriéndose en pobreza extrema con las moscas y la suciedad y todo, que mueran con dignidad. Y dice, para cuidarlos y amarlos y tenerlos, desde que sabemos que están sufriendo, porque se vayan de este mundo en un modo que es dignamente, que es digno.
Beautiful. Well, Margaret, I just want to tell you thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story with us. And
I hope I didn't overtalk it.
Not at all. We would like to have you come back on again when you get your news, whatever that news is.
Okay. If I get my news, I'll let you know immediately.
That's wonderful. We'll go ahead and close the show.
You said it will happen. You said it would. So I have to believe you.
Yes. You must have faith.
Well, I think something good is coming. I just feel it. That's all.
Okay.
It has to happen.
Yes.
Either that, or because I might just drop dead. Maybe that's the best way out.
No.
Well, you don't have to say that, Daniel, to anybody else.
Good to see you.
No.
Well, I'm okay. God bless you.
Margaret,
God bless you for being there.
So much. We thank you so much. And
gracias, Margaret. Muchas gracias.
Yes. And this will conclude the show for tonight. So thank you again, everyone out there, for spending this time with us and with Margaret, a wonderful lady. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Come back and listen to the on-demand episodes. Everyone, please send this show out to your friends, your colleagues, and your family. And don't forget about the free Help for HD original mobile app connection, your connection to education, resources, and information about JHD and HD. Also, find us on Facebook, Help for HD, or go to our website, helpforhd-international.org. Good night, everyone. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Margaret.
Bye, Daniel.
We love
Thank
you.
You did very well.
Te queremos, Margaret. Te queremos.
Love you, Margaret. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Let your shadow down that you found a girl in your married now. I heard that your dreams came true. Guess she gave you things.